Good afternoon. Welcome to our class. I have questions and I hope for open discussion. I like that devotion's on Jesus is Lord, and I thought of verse 4 in our first song, "For nothing fails unknown to him, or care or joy or sorrow, and he whose mercy ruled the past will be our stay tomorrow." I really like that thought. In control. But why does the Bible say that the day of the Lord will come? Did you study that yet? There is a period of time coming, another dispensation, when Jesus will take the world and rule from Jerusalem. But that's another subject. Welcome to our class on men finding fulfillment in leadership. How many of you need a handout yet? Raise your hands high. You don't have one. Anybody that needs one? I hope we have enough. I think we will. And like I said, I have some questions scattered down through. And I would like to have some discussion. Every italicized line, I think, is a question. The little fly line that went along with this for me says this: young men and ladies need to develop within God's design. Young men will need to learn to take the lead in a variety of efforts. Young ladies need to blossom while supporting the leadership of fathers, church leaders, school boards, etc. Embracing God's order of headship prepares them to flourish within God's designed roles in marriage. How many of you believe you have seen a home where the dad didn't really lead? Okay, that's too many. I know that you might all be thinking of the same home. I doubt it. You might be. How many of you have seen a home where mama ruled the roost? Uh-oh, some more hands are going up. Is that what you want? When you have the home and you're the dad, you're married, you have a wife, do you want her to be the boss telling you what to do? Now, what are you going to do about it? Well, that's why we're here tonight, this afternoon, to talk about this subject, to understand how men can find fulfillment in leadership. Now, in looking at these terms, fulfillment means a sense of satisfaction one receives from doing or achieving something. So, in other words, to be a leader and fulfilled, you're going to have to do something. Well, what do you mean? What do you have to do? Well, we're going to try to sort that out in our discussion. And that's why we want you to be involved. That really wasn't anything I thought a lot about as a young man preparing to court. I wondered what marriage would be like. I wondered what courtship would be like. And it was awfully scary to think about going and sitting with a young lady. I did not follow some of the rules I'd like to advocate this afternoon. I didn't call her dad. I didn't ask her. The only approval I got was from the two little children who were poking their heads out the top window at the house looking down on me whenever I drove up there. And that was the only thing that I, any test that I had to pass, and she had said that I could come. Wow, 47, 48 years ago. It's really something as you look back. In February, it'll be 48 years. Fulfillment, a sense of satisfaction. And then leadership is the art of motivating a group of people, or in this situation, a special friend, wife, and or family, to act toward a common goal. I can hardly believe what it has amounted to. When I went to see a young lady 47 and a half years ago, I didn't think that I would have a family of 80 grandchildren today. Over 100 of us in our tribe. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? God has really blessed us. I never thought that within my lifetime I would see a family like it. It never entered my mind. And I know that that's the working of God. But you don't know where you will be in 40 years or 50 years. What might be, what you might be doing. But it's something that is beyond our ability, and yet it isn't if we cooperate with God. And there's tremendous fulfillment in that. I'd like to just raise this question. Oh, to act in a common goal. I can't say we ever all worked on every goal in a common way. But I love how leadership motivates people to want to do that, to work together to get something done. Is it possible to ever find complete fulfillment in life? What do you think? What's your answer to my first? Maybe the question's too vague. So why do we have a subject like finding fulfillment? That's what I'm after. Balance that out. What's the opposite of fulfillment? What?
Emptiness.
Emptiness? Yeah. Frustration? Being vexed? You say things and nothing happens. You want to do something and you can't get them done. There's a lot of frustration in life today. And it comes because people don't lead. So in the sense of what they're looking for, do you think there are happy dads around who are happy with their family and the direction that they give? There's peace and joy there? Do you think there are, well, we asked you already if you've ever seen any homes that don't lead, and that is the frustration. Why should we seek fulfillment in relationships here? Why should we talk about this subject?
It's what we do as human beings. We're created to seek fulfillment in relationships.
Okay.
Whether that's spiritually or physically.
I like that. As human beings, we are created to seek fulfillment in relationships. We want that. And when there's discord, when there's disharmony, when we're all alone, it's not good for the man to be alone. Whenever things are not working, there's friction there. It's a vexation and a frustration to us. Any other answers?
When there isn't fulfillment God's way, then we pursue it elsewhere.
When you don't find fulfillment God's way, you will look somewhere. That is a good answer. And a lot of times people are looking in fulfillment in all the wrong places. I've done that already. And all it does is bring you guilt and misery, frustration. You don't want to go that way. But is it possible to have fulfillment in family life? Definitely. It's a wonderful thing. And I trust that you young men will find that someday, in spite of what you might live with at home. Well, here we have divided the lesson this afternoon into five areas: the plan, the problem, the principle, the practice, and the product. And I would like volunteers to read the Corinthians verses, 1 Corinthians 11:3, 7 to 12, 1 Timothy 2, 11 to 15, Isaiah 3, 10 and 7, 10 to 12. Right now, raise your hand or say the one you would like to read for us. Anyone?
I'll read the first one.
Okay. Is that a Hartzler back there? Or no, that's a Martin, right? Yeah, he kind of looked half more like Hartzler to me. But anyway, 1 Corinthians 11. Who will read 1 Timothy 2? Thank you. And Isaiah 3. Okay, read them when you're ready.
But I would have you know that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is the man, and the head of Christ is God.
And 7 to 12. I'm sure you've heard that explained, that there's God and Christ and man and woman. And as we're together in order and find our fulfillment in that plan, there's real blessing. That's called the order of headship. This is God's order. This is God's plan. And because of that, we don't wear a covering. We don't let our hair get long. We keep our hair shorn, and this is what it tells us is what is caused there. And the angels are watching. I believe verse 10 says that the angels, the woman ought to have authority on her head because of the angels. They are watching. They see whether you're taking your place in God's plan. But that doesn't mean that we would be, none of us would be here without a woman. We all know that. We all had a mother, every single one of us. Maybe you didn't know your mother, I don't know, but we all had a mother. And nobody's here without a mother, and nobody's here without having had a father. They both fill a place, and we know that we need each other, and that's why we're talking about courtship and marriage and all those things these days. All right, let's get First Timothy 2, 11, 15.
But the woman learned in silence with all subjection. But I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. For Adam was formed, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman, being deceived, was in the transgression. Notwithstanding, she shall be saved from childbearing if they continue in faith with charity and holiness with sobriety.
There's a lot to unpack in those verses. Did Eve think that she was doing the right thing when she ate the fruit? Did she believe she was doing the right thing? She really did. She was deceived. She thought it was the right thing. And Adam was sitting there, and was he deceived? Uh-uh. There was something in him saying, don't do that. So why didn't he say something? Because men too often don't say what their good judgment tells them they ought to say. Now, I'm not saying that Adam was fallen before he fell. He was just acting like a man does, sitting there, and not speaking up like he should be. That's what was going on. And the fall didn't come until he ate. You know that? Her eyes were only opened after Adam ate. The responsibility lay on him. It's a fascinating thing when you study. And he was with her the whole time. The Bible says that. He was there with her. He saw Eve. He saw the serpent just leading her down that path. And he didn't exercise leadership. Sad. Sad story. Yeah, well, there's a lot. We don't want to read too much into that. The Bible does not imply there that women cannot sing in church or pray in church or give a testimony. Because it says in 1 Corinthians 11, if they have their head covered, they may pray or prophesy. We know that. The silence there is not the mum silence that is spoken of in other places in the Bible. It just means they defer. And the emphasis is they do not take authority, not to authentites. We get our word be authentic or authority from that. They aren't the authority in the church. All right, let's go to Isaiah 3, 10 to 12. So is there any question in your mind that God wants men to lead? He wants men to lead in the homes. He wants men to lead in the church. He wants men to lead through in businesses. He wants men to lead. That is God's plan. So what are the traits God has given men? This is just going to take too long, isn't it? I'll just answer some of these. He told the men, go conquer. Go conquer the field. Go crumble off. Subdue the earth. And I love that. He put in us the spirit of the conqueror, the one to subdue, the one to go out and weed the fields and take the leadership. And to women, he gave her the nesting instinct, the characteristic with which God endowed women. She's emotionally sensitive. She senses emotional needs. Never laugh at your woman because when you have a wife, don't laugh at her for being more emotional than you are. God made her that way, her sensitivity. So she can sense the needs of the children, so she can care for them. And there's only one place where you should let her rule. I forgot to write that down. Do not try to boss the kitchen. I know there are men who boss the kitchen too. And in fact, I know one pretty well who does that. I wouldn't do that. I'll just say that because she's the keeper of the home, the one who is to basically take care of the family and rule in that kind of way. Well, that's the plan. Now, what's the problem? I came up with four problems, and we'll talk about these. Number one is that man naturally balks. Who's the man in Exodus 3:11, and why did he balk at the idea of taking leadership when God asked him to? You know who it is. Who is it?
Moses.
All right, Moses, and why did he balk?
He didn't feel capable.
He didn't feel capable. What was his... Did he actually have a physical problem? Oh, what was it? He couldn't talk. Okay, so why did Stephen say that he was mighty in word and deed? Ha, got you on that one. And you know what the answer is? I don't know either. I've often puzzled over that one. He says he couldn't talk, and God says, okay, I'll get somebody else to talk for you. But somehow, apparently, he got so involved in his leadership, he forgot that he couldn't talk. I kind of think that's what happened. And he ended up being mighty in word, but I don't know that. And sometimes if we just forget about the fact that we can't do something, we can do it. You know that? We just need to forget that we can't do it, and we can do it. All right, 1 Kings 3:7. Who was that? I can't do this, Lord. You don't know? You can look it up. Huh? Why? Why did Solomon say it? It's a mighty work, and I'm just a young man. I can't do that because he didn't have experience. Do y'all have the experience to lead a wife, to lead a girlfriend, to lead a wife, to lead a family? No, but guess what? One day you'll wake up and say, when did I get all of this? I had no idea this was all coming. And it just comes on you gradually, and if you rise to the challenge, you can do it, just like Solomon could. Isaiah 6:5. Who is this? Pardon? Isaiah. And what was his excuse for not doing? Why am I getting answers over here? I know what. You fellas sat in the back because you didn't want to talk, and then you ended up front, and now you don't know how. Well, let's take the leadership. I want some answers from here. Why did Isaiah say he can't talk? Or why he can't do what he had to do? Come on. I'm a man of unclean lips. I've got a problem. And if you've got something hidden in your life, you won't be able to do the leadership the way you should. It's exactly the way it works. He needed to get that cleansed, that taken care of, and then he could. There's something in the way. Admit it, deal with it, and get it taken care of. I want to make a plea with you. Yesterday, last evening, I guess it was, I had that up on the board, a disciple of Christ, calling Jesus Lord and acting like he is Lord, or a disciple of self. We're going to be one or the other. And what is the bottom line where you are? And if there's something messed up in that allegiance, that lordship, you can never take your place. And after a while, somebody will be ruling over you and you'll hate it. You have a domineering woman in your life or something, you'll hate it. All right, men in the past who have given flawed leadership. What are some leaders that mess things up and make leadership look bad? He became extremely jealous over the next leader God was planning to use in his program and sought to destroy him. I'm looking over here again. I know y'all know the answers, so I'm going over here. Okay. King Saul. Yes, thank you, Avery. Appreciate that. Thought because he was the king of Judah, he should also be allowed to offer priestly sacrifices. We didn't get to him yet, I don't think. Sunday school lesson, I didn't look very far ahead, but one of the next lessons. Anybody know who it is? And so, because he did, he'd been king a long time, and because he offered a sacrifice, he became a leper. And he died all alone, even though he was king. He got out of his place. And both of these are lessons for people who got so used to the position and power and abused it, they didn't do their leadership right, and they left a bad record. Anybody know? Alan, you can tell us. Not? Yes, Uzziah. Uzziah was the one. All right, let's go to the next page. He was partial to Jewish influence and changed how he related to the Gentile Christians depending on who was around. So he was flippy-floppy. Okay, who was it? I'll let you talk over here now again.
Peter.
And he loved the preeminence and disciplined church members for selfish reasons. Anybody?
Diotrephes.
Okay, so because people messed up in leadership and got out of their place and weren't consistent in their leadership, then we shouldn't try to lead, right? No. All of those could be studied as in leadership studies as a serious lesson as to why we shouldn't go that way. Well, there's another reason there's a problem in leadership today, and that is our society today has been influenced by the feminist movement. I actually asked my wife if I could copy what she was giving to the ladies. Maybe she's reading that right now. I don't know. But the feminist movement asserts that men and women should have equal rights and be treated equally. And so I just want to read this. Recent history and the woman's role. This know also that in the last days perilous time shall come. For men, women shall be lovers of their own selves without natural affection. They love dogs and puppies and they love all kinds of animals and other things. And women love women and marry them and men marry men. Lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. In the generation I was born into, she writes, in the 1950s, there were few divorces. Two divorces for every 1,000 people, history records. Two people. Two out of every thousand. One of those was our next door neighbor. When women married, they served inside the home. The Dick and Jane and Sally readers were our readers in elementary school. The readers pictured the father, mother, and children sharing life together as a family unit. Live in relationships in single-parent homes, unless it was a widowed, were unheard of. The parents paid close attention to disciplining their children. Women and girls wore dresses, with few exceptions. Men were the wage earners, even though they may not have been Christians. Society's guiding values in that era were of Judeo-Christian foundation, meaning that life was affected by the beliefs of Judaism and Christianity. In the years since the 50s, there has been a noticeable change in women's desire. There is markedly lesser interest to be involved in homemaking and child care. Instead, women free themselves from the home to be more independent. There has been a shift from the days when men were the workers and women were the homemakers. Today's push is for male and female's roles to be equal, where women can be the wage earner if they wish. I know a couple of men who are stay-at-home dads, while the mom was the breadwinner. Therefore, it should come as no surprise to learn that only 1/3 of America's mothers are stay-at-home moms. In the 70s, when we married, 3/4 of the women stayed at home and made the house a home for the family. Society says the days when women filled the role are long gone. How much of that shift is because people have willingly forsaken God and His Word for their own ways and pursuit of money and happiness? I can hardly believe this all happened in my lifetime. That is exactly what we have seen, that huge shift. Is it going to change our church life? Life in our churches. Will that come into our own churches where the ladies don't have children, they go off to work, and the men maybe stay at home with children, or if there are any children, and there won't be? We have followed so close behind the world. I wonder how far we'll go in accepting that as normal. How does the New Testament assertion that there is neither male nor female, and that is, where did I get that verse? It's in Galatians. I thought I had that here somewhere. I know I have it somewhere. Pardon? Yes, which gender is superior? I wanted to talk about that. Thank you. Which gender is superior? The Bible says that in Galatians 3:28, in Christ Jesus, there's neither male nor female, bond nor free, but Christ is all in all. Now, this question that I have this afternoon, then, since there's neither male nor female, and feminism teaches that male and female should be equal, isn't that the same thing? Explain to me the difference between what the Bible is teaching and what feminism is doing. Is that too deep for you? Alan.
I think feminism is trying to equate role with value.
Okay. Exactly.
And I think that's inaccurate.
Exactly. Exactly. God created women with womanly abilities and men with manly abilities. He made them distinctly different. Every one of the 3-4 trillion cells in your body says that you are a man. You are male. Never think that you are a woman. Even though you may have strange instincts and desires, never think that you are the other, because every cell in your body says that. It's intriguing to me. My wife was reading an article how that the women are going to be the new bosses in the big corporations and businesses, because it went on to say how that their brains are wired so differently that they're better bosses of big businesses. They can see the big picture and operate everything going at one. And man is so focused he can only do one thing at a time, which seems to be too true. But the fact of the matter is, God wired their brains to run a house. And God may have wired a man's brain to figure out how to solve a problem, to fix a car, or whatever he has to do. He wired our brains differently, and he says, I want you to fill it this way, and so people are capitalizing. I didn't include any of that in here today, but it's really, really strange. The fact of the matter is, you are not more valuable than your sisters and your mother or the women in your family, but you are called to a different role. Okay? You're not more valuable in God's eyes. We are both valuable. God accepts both. Christ died for both, but he made us for different roles. Number four, many young men feel intimidated, caught in the desire for companionship, but afraid of failure, so it seems better not to try, or they tried to establish a special friendship and were rejected. What is the difference between true humility that frees one to find fulfillment in one's calling and the false humility that keeps one chained to doubts and fears? Do you think there's some people who never marry, never take over, enter into a marriage relationship because they're afraid of failure? Anybody like that? What's wrong with that? Isn't that really humility? You don't know how to answer that question. If God gives us a calling, he will enable us in that calling. But you don't have to eat all the food for next year right now, okay? You don't get it all at once. You get a little bit all along. If you're going home in the dark and you're taking a flashlight along, you get the light for the steps that you need to make. And again, the God who took care of us yesterday will take care of us tomorrow. And we simply respond to the responsibilities he lays on our shoulder. Well, we need to keep going. I want to talk about the principle and the little sentence after that on the top of page 3. All true leadership is based in submission and servanthood. Now, if I would have used the board this afternoon, that's why I ended up giving you a handout. I would have put this on the board because there are two ditches on every road, and there's two ditches in the road of leadership. And the one ditch is called authoritarian leadership. And the other ditch is avoidance leadership. That's what I made up with. I looked up absconding and all kind of other words, and I finally said avoidance. Okay? You know what I mean by that. I'm afraid of, well, let's just see what, listen to what this man says. We've got a man who talks. The authoritarian man says, I'm the boss around here. Listen on me. Do it my way or else. The man with authoritative leadership says, I answer to my creator. In Luke 8, I wanted to look that up. Luke 7, 6 to 8. He was under authority and in authority, and he knew his authority was given him to serve others. This was a centurion, and he had a servant. And he was living his life. The centurion was helping the Jews in that town. And he had a servant that was dying that he loved him very dearly. And so he went to Jesus, and he said, Jesus, and Jesus said, well, I can't come. And he said, oh, no, don't. Jesus didn't say that. He just said, don't even come. Just speak the word. I know you're a man in authority, and if you say it, you're under the authority. You're the Lord, is actually what he was saying. You're under God's authority. If you speak the word, you can heal my servant even if you don't come to my house. He believed that. Because just like I am under authority of the Roman Empire, I tell these men under me what to do, and they do it. And so authoritative understands that we're under authority and we are simply carrying out the responsibility that was given us to do. And so he talks differently. I answer to my creator, and this issue needs to be addressed. How can we solve this together? Avoidance leadership says, I'm not getting involved. Problem? What problem? I'm not going to see a problem there. Some of y'all look like you're about to go to sleep. You want to just stand up a little bit? I hate to put people to sleep when I'm talking. Okay? We'll just stand up for a little bit. Authoritarian leadership says, mistakes are not allowed. They just show you are stupid. Anybody who calls their children or their family stupid or their people on the job is asking for trouble. Okay? Authoritative leadership says, we all make mistakes. We'll learn from them and we'll do better next time. Avoidance leadership says, I'm too afraid, I'll fail, so it's better not to try. You may be seated again, unless you need to stay standing just to stay awake. Some of y'all stayed up pretty late last night, didn't you? All right, what do you think you mean? What do you mean you think you have a better way? It's authoritarian. Authoritative said, what advice do you have? I'm seeking for help from others' perspectives. Avoidance says, I can't handle criticism because it proves I'm no good at leading out. And so they cave in. Authoritarian leadership says, how can I use my position to get my way? Serve myself. You know what? I just about hear our president when I look over here at the authoritarian leadership thing. Maybe not. Maybe that's just the way the media wants me to hear him. But authoritative leadership says, how can I use my authority to serve our relationship? Okay, yes, I am the husband. Yes, I do lead out in our home. How can I use that in a way to make everybody benefit and our family work together? Avoidance says, I want my way, but I'll have to figure it out on my own. Now, I left those blanks here because I'd like you to fill in some more. If you grew up in a home where dad was the big boss, that's normal for you. And it's easy for you to hate that and turn around and do the exact same thing yourself. How are you going to do something different when that's all you've seen and you think that's normal? And there's other people that grew up in a home where dad just, he was a wimp. Mom was the one who pushed things every. How are you going to grow up and exercise leadership? Only by saying, God expects me to lead out, and whenever you begin a relationship, here's where the practice, here's where it meets the road. Now, one thing I want to tell you before we leave this. One of the clear evidences of a person you want to avoid sharing life with. Maybe they're pretty. Maybe they sing like an angel. Maybe their smile just lights up the room. But if this girl does not living in submission to her authorities, if she doesn't respect her authorities, any evidence of rebellion or resentment to her, parents, church, workplace, authority, or even the state is a clear sign that you should discontinue the relationship or at least give her a chance to change. Do not go into a relationship where she is standing up against authority. Because there's girls who grew up in a home where they were left to do whatever they want. I wish I could be sitting in my wife's class because she was going to be telling some stories about how she was raised and how that all had to change when we got into married life. But there were times whenever we have struggled with this very same issue. This is dear to my heart because when it's easy sometimes just to back down and let somebody else take over the leadership when we can't do that. We're called to lead, and that's what we need to do. So here's the practices. It should be the young man who takes the initiative to begin the special friendship. How should a young man respond when he picks up signals that a young lady is chasing him? Boy, doesn't that feel good to know there's somebody that likes you? You look up and she's looking at you and she smiles. Or she kicks you under the table like one lady did, girl did at Bible school. Or she bumped me and said, come on, what are you waiting on? How should you respond to something like that? You had any girls chase you? You know what you should do, right? I don't know. There's some. Okay, come on. You can answer. Anyone. Joe, maybe you should tell him. Did you have any girls chase you when you were a young man? Only the one that caught you, huh? Nobody else had that? Wow, I guess I'm weird. Must have been something wrong. I knew of a couple of them that were chasing me different times. I avoided them like the plague. Because I was afraid that if he started out in the driver's seat, they'd just want to stay in the driver's seat the rest of the relationship. Is that the wrong signal? Was that the wrong advice? I couldn't even get my girlfriend to look at me and smile. Even after we were married, one time we met at the park. That's another story. Number two. A young man honors the leadership principle when he goes to the father of the sister to ask for permission to court. Before you start smiling at a girl, talking to her, sending her text, or getting any kind of relationship going, you need to be a man and go face the man in his her life. You know that? We didn't have to do that when I was young. I'm sorry, though. I wish we would have had to. It would have been better. But nobody thought about telling us then. But she is under her father's authority. And if you're going to start a relationship that takes her out of her dad's authority, we did that after we were engaged and went and sat with them and asked them if we could get married and if the dates would work and all that kind of thing. But you ought to do it beforehand. Now, the question is, what are some items a suitor should expect to answer when he faces the girl's father? What do you expect him to dig out?
Moral purity.
Moral purity. I have three M's that I tell dads to ask the young men about. Morals, money, and mama. The morals is, what kind of life have you lived in secret? Do you have masturbation in your life? Do you have pornography in your life? Have you molested your sisters or anyone else? Is there anything going on that hasn't been cleared up? I want to hear the whole story. Why? Because a girlfriend can't ask those questions. What's she going to ask? And when's she going to ask it? And I tell them when they come to get married, okay, this is a time when there's no secrets anymore. No secrets. You want to get married to a lady with a whole bunch of secrets in her past? Stuff she has hidden and doesn't tell anybody? That's a disciple of self. I know that happens, and it's sad. And how do you think the young man who is pure and virtuous feels when he marries a young lady and feels like she's had and finds out that she was unfaithful to him? I tell you what, that was scary. The first girl that I ever saw, I was talking to an old friend of mine. I asked him about this story. And we were somewhere in an afternoon at 16 years old, and that girl caught my eye, and I thought she was pretty neat. But as we walked home along the Georgia road, he told me that she had crawled out the window and gone away with her brother-in-law for a night and gotten involved immorally with him. And I was like, wow. I thought she was a nice girl. You mean a nice girl can have something like that in her life? Yes. You can be totally fooled. We'll talk about that some tonight. So you go talk to the dad, and you need to talk about, you have credit cards maxed out? You have balances you don't pay every month on your credit cards? Where is your financial situation? What's your morals like? What's your relationship with your mom like? What kind of mom do you have? Nice woman? Mean woman? How do you get along with her? You could talk about a lot more than that. I know of a young man that ended up with files of papers and forms that he needed to fill out. I never got that sophisticated. But we still had good talks, and I'm glad we've had those talks. The young man should plan the date, number 3 on page 4. But ask for ideas what his special friend would enjoy doing. How does a young man ask for ideas without sending the signal that he's afraid to lead out? Take the initiative and say, okay, I'd like to come see you. I'd like to take you to church. I'd like to do this with you. I'd like to take you out to eat or whatever you do. All of our activities centered around church life, at least most of them whenever I was a young man, and I think that's good. There was nothing wrong with that. But I realize that it's a little different now than it was then, and we didn't take them flowers. I didn't ever even thought of the thing. I grow her lots of flowers now. I take her flowers every day, but I didn't then. Not quite every day, but what do you do? Okay, the more you can get ideas and the more you can listen to her ideas, the more you can work with her, this is what it takes in a relationship. The suitor should lead out in devotional time and in prayer. What should devotional time consist of when on a date? How many of you are dating couples here right now? Any boys here that are dating in the middle of a... Nobody? Oh, one, two, three, over here? Okay. What do you do about devotional life? I tell you what, I was so scared. I met my girlfriend. She didn't say, and I didn't tell her that I was watching her. But it did get out That was aggravating. It did get out. I didn't know it. So I came to Pennsylvania again. I lived in Florida. I came to Pennsylvania a year later, and I was at Bible school, and I called her up and asked her for a date. I'd like to bring her up to Bible school. I didn't know that was against the rules. Broke the rules. Nobody told me. Went to find her and got lost on the way. Was shaken like a leaf. Finally, I arrived, and the two little heads were poking out the upstairs window. And then the front door opened, and there she was, smiling at me and welcomed me into the living room, the parlor. They had a dating parlor. What are you going to do? I'm scared half to death. I said, let's have devotions. And that's what the first thing we did. We read from Psalm 34. Second date, I asked her, we're reading from 1 John 2, and I asked her what the word propitiation means. What a silly thing to do. I did it all wrong. She probably should have left me right then. But we look back and we laugh and we think it's a lot of fun what we did. Okay? I don't regret those days, because you know what? I didn't know how to court and she didn't know how to either. Is that okay? Is that okay if you start out and learn together? Yes, it is. But one thing for sure, fellas, take time, most of your dates, take time to say, we're just going to read the Bible, we're going to talk about it, and we're going to pray together, and we're going to ask God to lead us. Do that, okay? That becomes the beginning of your family worship. You need that. You need the grace of God pouring into your relationship, because he can do things for you can't do for yourself. Well, I better be quiet. Time to let you go back. Time to shut this down. Take this along and think about it. If you have more questions, we can talk about them sometime. Thank you for coming and staying awake.